Well, hello everybody and welcome to this bonus episode of The Rewatch Project. Now, listeners of the show will already know that we are fans of this stage and screen actor for his roles in Matador, True Detective, Terminator Dark Fate and the eagerly awaited Last of Us and UTAP TV shows. But of course, also as Robbie Reyes, aka Ghost Rider in Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that we've been covering these last few months on The Rewatch Project. We are beyond happy to be joined on this episode by Gabriel Luna. Hey, Toronto, how are you today? Welcome from New Zealand. We just want to thank you so much for your time, Gabriel. It's a real thrill to be speaking to you. We're big, big fans.
And we feel very, very lucky that you decided to grant us
the... Hannah, it's my pleasure. And I get a lot of requests for podcasts and whatnot, and I don't know what happens. I guess you guys tagged me on the thing, and I saw it, and I was like, I'm in a nostalgic mood. Let's see what they're talking about. And I listened to it, and I had such a good time. It felt like I was hanging out with you two on your couch, and it felt so nice.
Oh, amazing.
I love the banter back and forth. And you guys have a nice format. It's like 30, 40 minutes, get in, get out. So it's really a lot of fun. So I had to do it when Mike reached out. So,
oh, well, whenever you're in New Zealand, come and sit on our couch. That's no problem.
what town are you guys in?
So we are in Lower Hutt, which is near Wellington. Down the bottom of the North Island.
Yeah, no, my wife and I were in New Zealand for Christmas, I think 4 or 5 years ago. And we drove around and we just kept remarking to each other how just to drive, I mean, it was really just look out the window and see something.
Oh, yeah.
Incredible. Yeah, yeah. We moved here only a few years ago. Hannah's from New Zealand, yeah. I'm from the UK. And the novelty never wears off. Every time we drive along the coast, I'm like a dog with his head out the car window, just exactly. Excitedly viewing. It'll never get old.
Right out the gate, we left Auckland. We went south. We spent time in Hamilton because we wanted to see the Lord of the Rings stuff, of course. But we went around like Waitomo Caves, which was beautiful, and all of that. And went to Rotorua, and we had a great time. And then we flew down to South Island. And spent all in all, we were there for a couple weeks.
Spent
some time in Queenstown and did some like exciting things. Went fishing and went to the Fiordlands. Took a little helicopter onto the glacier.
Oh, Fox Glacier, lovely.
Oh, so beautiful. It's just speaking with you brings up a lot of great memories. But as far as like head out the window, like dog, like wagging his tongue and looking out the window, that was me like driving straight away from Auckland. But that got me in a bit of a trouble because I, first time driving on the right side of the car and I'm looking out the window and everything's so beautiful. And I'm and it couldn't have been but like 20 minutes outside of kind of suburban Auckland that I would get pulled over by a police officer. And he was the kindest, sweetest little old man. And all he could talk about was the All Blacks. Oh, the All Blacks, we second only team to ever win 2 World Cups in red. And I was just like, oh, man. He's like, oh, they train right over here. They train right here, the All Blacks. And then we became like huge rugby people. My wife and I, we just researched the team. We just fell in love with it. We watched all the documentaries and, about Richie and all the guys. And I loved them.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was great. The ticket was only like $15 or something. It was very cheap.
Oh, amazing.
Well, it sounds like you've had the quintessential New Zealand experience, and it sounds like you've actually seen more of New Zealand than I have, and I live here. But we're as Hannah said at the beginning, we're very sort of appreciative and sort of mindful of your time. So we're just wondering. I mean, obviously today we find you yourself in Toronto. So I'm just wondering, before we take a bit of a trip down memory lane, can I just ask you, are you there working on UTAP? Is that what you're working on at the moment? And if so, is there anything you can tell us about that?
At present, it's untitled Arnold Project. Of course, he and I worked on Terminator Picture together some years back. And Skydance is our production company who's doing the show, producing the show here. And a few years, Arnold and I have the same agent now. He moved over to my agency and we love each other. We're friends, we spend a lot of time together and training and, birthday parties, Christmas parties and you know, we do some charity work together there in Los Angeles. And it had come across that he was doing this program, and I was excited. I thought it was a great idea. It's kind of a spy comedy, action comedy, spy thriller kind of deal. And, you know, I was like, man, I gotta work on that with you. And then, you know, not thinking anything of it. It's like two and a half, three years ago, maybe. And then, then the scripts came in and they reached out back in April, and there's this really great part for me. I played Boro Polonia, who, you know, I don't know what came out in the press release. So I don't know how much I can say, but,
yeah, we don't want to put you in breach of contract here.
I start out as someone who's just absolutely hero worships this guy. He's like a second father to me. And I'm a bit of a nefarious character, but you know, that's only to the outside viewer. It's a matter of perspective, really. It's
kind of a lovely character to play, though, because there's more range when you get to do, you know.
Yeah, you know, I've never played like a straight up and down bad guy. Even Terminator, I don't really consider bad. I always said in the interviews that I was as bad as your toaster, your refrigerator, your
it's just amoral,
Mr. Coffee.
Yeah,
and I just was really excited by it. So that's what we're making now. It's a show for Netflix. It should be out, you know, probably second quarter next year. And I'm not sure of if that's just that's complete speculation, but you know, as far you do enough of these, you kind of get a sense of the release schedules, but that's definitely not official. But I feel like sometime next year you'll see the show.
We're definitely looking forward to that one. And from interviews with you, and I guess from sort of your sports background and the physicality of your performances, you really get the sense that you're a hard worker. And I've heard a lot about Arnie's work ethic as well. And I was just wondering if that's been the case in your experiences with Arnie, and also does that align with your own work ethic?
Absolutely. No, you hit the nail on the head there. You know, I grew up in Texas. I was from Austin, Texas. And while school is always number one, you know, my mother had me at a very young age and always instilled very strongly in me that school was primary. And but you know, I showed a lot of ability as an athlete, and have been an athlete since I was 6 years old. I started playing tackle football when I was 6 years old. I know what it is to be in a team atmosphere. I know what it is to lead by example and lead from the back. And he, as an athlete himself, you know, I think that's something that really kind of drew us to each other. One, our background being that of a couple of people who kind of made a lot from a little. And I think he really respects people when he meets them. He comes across folks, and when you see it in the company he keeps and the people that he really tends to I guess keep as friends in this world we work in. You know, it's we get so quick, we come so close, and we become such a tight unit, this familial kind of entity. And then of course, as you know, it's a traveling circus and you part ways and you don't see these people who you don't always keep the friends, but he's someone that has kept me and I've kept him. And
I think you would have to be that. Quite I mean, similar just, people for that to happen.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right. And I think, you know, I'd like to think that. I'd like to think that I display the same type of, care for others and discipline and focus in my work, which has always been something to me that's been the most important element of what I do. You know, it can be a very superficial job at times if you really don't actively try to dig as deep as you can and work the job like a ditch digger. You know, yeah. I always say, and I think he comes from. He was a farmer's son who was also a policeman, worked two jobs, a policeman and a farmer.
And it's quite the combo.
Yeah. It's just discipline, you know. I mean, that's what I've taken from him as a friend and as a co-star and as, you know, one of my heroes is that it's just consistency and discipline. You know, he's goes to bed at 12, wakes up at 6, does his training. Gets that all done, breakfast, everything by 9, and starts his day and does it every single day of his life. And, you know, training has become like brushing his teeth or breathing. And that's, yeah. And that's something that's a big part of my life too, thanks to him.
We're going to take the listeners back a little bit. How did you get into acting? And did you start with the theatre or did you start on screen? And tell us a little bit about your beginnings. Our daughter's just started drama, so it's quite interesting.
I feel like I want to do the whole deal and turn it on you guys, because from listening, it sounds like you both have experience in theatre.
It's very dramatic.
Only the theatre of the mind.
Okay. Well, no, just your assessment of the show and your insight, you're really kind of close a lot of times to what it is and what the process is. And I was curious if you guys had experience, but no, as I said, I was primarily a student athlete. And, my mother was very young. As I said, she was a 15-year-old widow, and my father passed before I was born. They were both young teenagers when they met. They met in church. And so, my whole deal was school, sports, rinse, repeat, just do it. And did very well in school. I was top 10 in my class with about 5,000 students. That was a very big high school in South Wow. Austin, Texas. And I was going to go to college. It's just a matter of going there for free because my mom couldn't pay for it. I had to figure out a way. Yeah. So I was in the process of kind of getting grants together and everything else. And then a lot of interest came from a few colleges to play football. And I was entertaining those offers because it was, while they weren't the most well-reputed academic institutions, it was a free ride. And that was a big element of how I was going to make my decision. Classic, you blow up your shoulder and everybody dumps you. Like you were never a prospect, It's all of a sudden it's just all the interest quickly evaporates. And I was, luckily I was a very strong student, as I mentioned. I was content to fall back on my, I had already been accepted to the University of Texas to go to business school. And so I was just trying to pull the money together. And I was in a technical theater class at the time, getting my fine arts credit, swinging a hammer, building sets for the theater. While I loved to draw, I didn't want anybody kind of telling me how to do that. I loved to sing and didn't want anybody seeing me do that. And I wasn't in the band or anything like that. So this was how I was going to get my fine arts credit. And we were reading a play, and Mr. Sharp, our teacher, heard me read, and we were reading to study set design through the story, how the story informs you as to what we're going to build. And so I read this part. I don't even remember which part it was, but the teacher seemed to think I showed promise, and he asked me to come try out for the play that day or the following day or whatever it may be. And I quickly told him, shut him down. I was like, no, sir, I can't do that. I got to go to practice, which was my excuse, which was only half true because I was going to practice while injured, but it wasn't required. So I was able to kind of skate and get out of that one. And I just kind of shuffled off. Really, I was just afraid, So I went to practice and I went home and I get a call from my grandmother, who had found some items that belonged to my dad, want me to have them. And I was very excited by this, as I always was when someone had some new information or something that he artifact or something that he owned or touched, it was always very important to me. So I drove over there and she gives me the box, and it's in the attic of all those trophies he had won from various different sports and things, all of his yearbooks, which were precious and still are to me. And that they, in the back, you get to see his personality through the eyes of his peers, who he was as a person. And up to that point in my life, been described as a perfect angel by my mother and his mother. Family, but this was cool to see that he was just a person and just a guy like me. Yeah. And then of course at the end, the bottom of the box is a videotape. I told the story so many times, but it's just, it always kind of gets to me every time I tell it, that what life would have been had I not seen this. But I put the tape in the VCR. You have to explain to the kids what that is. And I watched the tape, and it's my father in a play that he wrote, starred, and directed for our church.
Oh, incredible.
Wow.
It would have been 8 months prior to my birth, 5 months prior to his passing. And it was an Easter play. And he wrote this play, and he was in it. And my mom was in it in the non-speaking role in the background, a month pregnant with me, you know, unbeknownst to her. Wow. And she played an angel. She had like little wings and everything. And this was the first time I had ever seen him animate. This is the first time I've ever heard his speaking voice. And I watched him as he commanded a room of, at the time, you know, I've now played houses of, you know, 3,000 on stage. He was in front of maybe 150 people in the church, and it was just the most incredible thing to me.
That he what an insight into his,
to go and do all
his inner creative life as well. The fact that this was something that he wrote as well. So what a gift to find that.
Absolutely. I mean, and he was a beautiful artist and a very poetic person. I just came across some old love letters that he and my mom used to exchange in church, and he would draw these little pictures, and you know, he called himself El Tigre, which I don't know what he, I guess he thought it was cool or something.
But I don't think I could pull that off, could I, as a name? Yeah. Quite frankly, I wish I could, but it takes a special man to be able to pull off El Tigre.
To be El Tigre, yeah, exactly.
Mike's so got the handwriting of a serial killer, so yeah. If our kids find any notes from him, oh my
yeah,
gosh.
They'd think that it was like a kidnapping note if they read my handwriting.
Or a physician.
Yeah. Well, that's very generous of you, Gabriel. Yeah, that's better. We'll go with physician, shall we?
I think that's, and then wanting to, you know, in the moment I was like, screw it. I'm going to go try out. Cause all of a sudden after I had collected my emotions, and this was a very pivotal moment, I remember in the moment thinking, I'm going to go do it as soon as I stop crying. And then, so the next day I went to Mr. Sharp and I told him I would. And then we did the read, and he invited me to the theater room afterwards. And I told the coach I wasn't going to be at practice. He looked me all sideways like I was crazy. And then I went to the, you know, I'm in my Letterman's jacket, and I'm looking at all the theater kids, and I was impressed by their confidence, you know, like they knew who they were. They weren't afraid to be who they were. And then he hands me the scene, and it's a scene from a play called 1918 by Horton Foote. And it was, he gave me the pages. It was the lead character, talking to this older woman, asking her, he's standing in front of two unmarked graves, asking which one belongs to his father. And I remember in my mind, I was like, I've done this before. I know what this feels like. I've stood at my father's grave hundreds of times. I know exactly what this feels like. And all of a sudden, all the pressure and the fear and everything just completely alleviated. And I just, it was involuntary breathing, you know.
Just raw performance.
Came out, just felt very natural. You know, I just like, I've done this before. And I just said the words and stood there and said the words, which to this day, you know, eventually I did the play. So a woman saw it. She gave me a full ride to St. Edward's University to go to school. Only catch was I had to be a theater major, which I figured they'll teach me how to do that. But in essence, in truth, as much as I learned in school, that first moment of being stand still, say the words, have the experience, you know, live a life to where you have enough experience that when you step up to the mark, that you're not a phony. You can just tell the truth. And you know, there's a lot to be said about that. It's really not, you know, a lot of it is instinct and things you do, but really in terms of teaching, that was a kind of a self a realization of a kind of a universal truth about what we do, you know. But yeah, so I did theater. I did several years of theater in Austin and started doing films, independent films in Austin.
Of course, because I mean, Austin's an incredible film town, isn't it?
Yeah. It absolutely was at the time and still is. And, you know, could have gone even further in that direction had, you know, were we not in the middle of a sea of red, a bunch of idiots that just make decisions for others that they shouldn't, you know, in terms of the political spectrum. But because, you know, they would be incentives to make films there, and all of a sudden these incentives would go away. For really dumb reasons, because they didn't want Hollywood guys to come into town. But, you know, there was a lot of, and there's a lot of creativity and a lot of great filmmakers come out of Austin. I've worked with Richard Linklater and Robert Rodriguez, and all of these people who were heroes to me and were always on the radar. You know, if you're interested in doing the work I do, then you would have known about them. You would have known what they're shooting, where they're shooting in town, you and all these things. It still felt so unattainable, but you would know. And it was so weird that I had to go all the way to LA to kind of come all the way back around. I went a long way around to work with Robert Rodriguez, who was kind of my first big break. You know, ever since that moment, I've been an actor and solely an actor. And that would have been, 2012 when we did Matador, which was a show for his network about coincidentally another spy show where I played like a soccer star / spy.
And, have you been a spy in real life? Is that what you're trying to tell us?
I wouldn't tell you if I.
Well, that's a good answer. I was just wondering, we're probably going to embarrass you a little bit here now, Gabriel.
But we just watched The Gray Man
Yes. Yeah, haven't seen it yet. That's probably on our to watch list this weekend. That's the new Russo brothers movie, I believe.
The Russos do a spy picture, and it's excellent. See it on it's Netflix, but see it on a bigger screen if you could manage to get it. Yeah.
We've got a projector in the basement, so we'll
perfect. We'll
do that.
I wish I had that here.
We're going to embarrass you a little bit here because we've, as you know, the conceit of our podcast, The Rewatch Project, is that we watch and discuss every episode of beloved TV shows, and the one we're doing currently is Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We had seen it before, hence the title Rewatch. Yeah. But what one thing that really occurred to us was how much you pop out the screen when you appear in that show, and how difficult it must be coming into a pre-established show.
That's just my eyeball popping. My face melts away.
This is being humble. And you really jumped off the screen on this rewatch. And we're wondering, so how did you get the role of Robbie, and how aware were you of this universe before you stepped into that role?
Well, I was at the time. I mean, how far were we into like the MCU stuff? I mean, we were starting, I guess, second phase ish.
Yeah, it was phase two, I think.
Probably right. And the it might have been nearing the phase three part of it, because once I was doing the role, we introduced a lot of visual elements that were going to be kind of unveiled during Doctor Strange. And there was a big tie-in with Doctor Strange at the time. I did a picture called Trans-Pecos, which went to South by in 2015 and won the Audience Award there. And we were on a festival house on the main street. There's only one street. It's a one road town. And, literally sitting on my porch, like watching tumbleweeds go by. And, we had a screening. So yes. And I get a call from my agents saying, because they had been asking me about this part on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for a couple months. And I kept saying, no, I just kept saying no, because it was a guest star. And I loved the Marvel stuff, and I didn't want to get, you know, to be burned doing a part that wasn't really going to mean a lot in the long run.
Waste your shot, so to speak.
At the time, I thought, yeah, okay, right. And so I just kept saying no. And that's just a lesson that I try to tell, you know, actors, and to always advocate for themselves. And people ask me questions. It's, you know, no's a powerful word, and there's you have to use it strategically at times, and not know what's going to be on the other end of it, you know, to not know that you're going to land somewhere, but you have to, you know, be aware enough to know when that moment comes. And in this instance, I said no, and had been saying no for a couple months. And then finally got back to me. They're like, Comic-Con was about to come up in a couple weeks or something. And they were like, and they were up against it. I think they were going into production maybe 2 weeks later. Cause I remember, so this would have been a Friday. We had a screening that night of the movie I did. And I remember sitting in my porch in this house I rented. There's a lot of crazy coincidences that weekend. I mean, I won't go into all of them, but one of them was like my co-star in that film I did was Clifton Collins Jr., who was in Capote, who's in Westworld now. He's been in tons of stuff. You'd know him if you see him. He's a wonderful actor. And I rent this house, and there's an autographed picture of his grandfather, Pedro Gonzalez, who was in all the John Wayne movies, who was a very famous comedic actor from Mexico. Brilliant man. Clifton comes from good stock. He's his grandson, of course. And there's a picture of his granddaddy in the house I just rented. It was so weird. And then soon I'm on the porch and I get a call from my agents. And they're like, we found out what that part is. You need to go online and look up Ghost Rider. I was like, I know who the Ghost Rider is. But why would they want me to do it? You know, I thought maybe I had done a show called Harley and the Davidsons, which was about the creation of the machine and the invention of the machine and the creation of the company. And I thought, well, maybe they saw me on that because I played Eddie Hasha, who was his motorcycle champion. And I was like, but still, I don't know the logic of, and you know, that's the problem with this world. Sometimes like already you doubt yourself in certain roles just because it's never happened before. Right. And you know, it was more so just the logic of how I would be the ghostwriter. I was okay. So I looked it up and then I see all these stories coming out of Comic-Con that they had been wrapping buses in San Diego with flaming chains.
I remember that tease poster and people going, is that Ghost Rider? Is Ghost Rider going to be on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Exactly. So they were also saying, oh, it may be Axel's character, the Hellfire, maybe him or me, because he was on the show already. But I looked up to, and I was like, Ghost Rider. And I looked up and then all this stuff comes up about Robbie Reyes, Ghost Rider, created by Felipe Smith and Trad Moore in 2014, which is at the time only 2 years prior to the moment in time I was in. And I was like, wow. And I started reading about this character. I was like, oh my God. He was somewhat orphaned. He was orphaned and he had a little brother, younger brother like me. And they kind of taught each other to be men the way my brother and I taught each other to be men when my father had passed. And then of course, when I was seven, his father left. My mother divorced him. It was my mother and us. And while my mother's here, and I love her. Of course she's here. She's, you know, I'm by no means an orphan, but spiritually sometimes because she's only 15 years older than me. In a way, sometimes we're more siblings than a mother and a son. And so the experience of having to be a man and make decisions, adult decisions at a very early age. And all of that was, as we said, if you can have those life experiences, you don't have to fake it. And it was already in there. And I was reading all about this character. I was like, oh my God, this kid's perfect. Yeah. Young, handsome dude from East LA and whatever it is, or at least that's how he was drawn. And I looked at myself in the mirror. I was like, "Yeah, I can pull that off. I look kind of like this guy." and I was like, "I'm excited." I tell him I'll meet with him. And so they set up a Zoom with me, Jeff Loeb, Jed, and Mo Whedon, and Sarah Finn. They were going to call me at a certain time, and I had to sit there. And I'm just sitting there because I have a screening to go to of my movie. But it's okay because it's like a stone's throw from where I'm sitting because it's a very small town. I can just stumble over there whenever I needed to. But I'm just sitting there trying to get the internet to work. And I'm just like this. And we couldn't get the Zoom thing going. And, you know, the assistants were trying to help me through it. Because this is, you know, I'm not the biggest computer guy or whatever. And even probably less so 6 years ago. And then, it's been a while. But, so I'm here looking at the deal. And finally, there they are, a little Brady Bunch. Everybody's there. And I'm talking to them about it, but we're talking about the character, but we're not talking about the character. They don't say Ghost Rider. They don't say any of that. They know I know that they know I know, but we still don't talk about it, which is the weirdest kind of interaction we've ever had. But they were very excited. You know, they're like, we've been contacting your people about it. We think you'd be good for this. And we hope that you like the material, everything else. We're going to send you, would you mind reading? And I was like, sure. Yeah, no problem. they're like, can you put something together for us and send it? I was like, yeah, I got this screening tonight, but I can do it tomorrow morning. And we talked and fine, you know, I kind of cut it short, which is always good. You kind of leave them wanting more. Sorry, I have somewhere to be, guys. I got this movie, you know, my movie star.
Thank you.
But anyway, they were also sweet. And immediately out of the gate, I could sense family among these people.
Yeah.
Just the way that they spoke and the way the husband wife team, very much like yourselves, Jed and Mo, and just the whole deal just felt very homey. Not to mention I'm sitting on a porch watching tumbleweeds go by and whole thing. and so I just loved meeting them. I thought they were wonderful people. And I went to see my screening. The next day I had to move out of the house because I had planned on I mistimed everything and I forgot. I thought I had rented it for another night, but I didn't. So I was like, oh, screw it. I'll go to the Thunderbird, which is this really nice hotel in Marf, a really beautiful place owned by some folks from Austin. And I was like, all right, I just walked over to Thunderbird, got a room. And then I was going to do my tape. And you can, if I ever release my, my audition tape, which I plan on doing just for the sake of seeing, you know, how it's happened. You can hear in the background this house music going as I'm trying to do these scenes. They're kind of dummy scenes. They are from the show, but they're a little bit, because they always try to kind of fake you out. They give you a scene. For Terminator, I audition with scenes from Collateral, the Tom Cruise movie. You know, you never know if you're actually getting their actual material.
Mm. Yeah.
They give you dummy sides, you know. But this one was pretty close. A couple of scenes actually ended up in the show, but I'm reading the thing and I'm loving every minute of it. I think it's, you know, there's it's a very soulful person. He's very tough. He's a strong person. He's a smart person. You know, he has all the elements of the characters that I like to play. And I turn down a lot of things so that I can be in positions to play characters like this, you know, and not just be the bad guy or the drug dealer or whatever the case may be. And so this is Saturday and we do it. I send it in, they call me, the agents call, they love it. They want to see you. They need to fly back tomorrow. You're going to have a meeting. You're going to go meet with Jeff and Jed and everybody else. I was, all right. So go back to LA, go to the meeting, walk in. There's Jeff, there's Jed, there's Mo, there's Seraphine, her assistants. And then there's little Benny, who's big Benny now. Benny's like probably, I don't know how old she is now, 9 or 10. No, she's not that. She's probably like 7, but it's for family. I mean, and then I knew nothing about the show really. And I think you guys mentioned on your show, like you hit it on the head. That's exactly what this show is about. I mean, you got awesome action, awesome effects, awesome performances, but at the soul of everything is family. And it starts from Jed Whedon, Mo Tenteron, that husband, wife team. I mean, they're, Mo's father was our transpo coordinator, you know, the baby was always around and that's very much what it was. And, you know, whenever you wanted to like set visits, I'd have people, friends from college came in LA one time. They let all 6 of them show up and just, you know, get to tour the lot. And they went to go see the Gone with the Wind house. And yeah, all that is to say his family was paramount in the way that they handled themselves, the culture they established for the show. And of course the show is so I did it. I got the part. They call me the next day. You got the part. So, and then we start shooting on Friday.
So Whoa.
From the time I met with them to the time I was on set shooting was a week's time.
Wow.
And in that week, they gave me all the scripts. I read all the scripts. And there I am, first day of work, Culver City, doing the scene where I squish the knot in my car. And from one moment to another, you know, I'm working, I'm sitting in my chair, I go do the scene, I come back to my phone in my chair and it's completely lit up. It's everybody I've ever knew pretty much texting me saying, oh my God, they just announced you at Comic-Con, because the entire cast except for me was at Comic-Con having a great time. And I was having a better time playing Ghost Rider in the first day. And that was how it started. And I can't believe that people are still as in love with the character as I was doing it to this day. And so I'm just, you know, I've always been very grateful and thankful for that.
It made a real impression. And a lot of our feedback on our show has been about that, hasn't it? Has been about you. And I'm just wondering, that's a really useful segue, Gabrielle, about you talk about family. Now, obviously, the character of Robbie, a lot of the storyline was around your character's sort of guilt and protecting of his family. And dealing with a world where privilege doesn't always extend to all areas of society. Was right. that subtext something that was discussed in your building of the performance?
You know, I think that is in the source material, really. We adhered very strongly to Felipe's original run of the all-new Ghost Rider. In the essence of the character and a lot of the framing even of certain shots, like, was pulled straight from panels from that book. And also just from experience of living life and knowing, you know, the gaps that exist, the socioeconomic gaps that in turn create, I mean, when you live in Los Angeles, you can see it. You know, I kind of live near where Robbie comes from. I live a little bit further north, across the highway in a part of the town that's become much more gentrified than it once was, of course. But I see it, you know, it still exists to this day from one side of the highway to the next. It was never really had to be explicitly stated. I think we all understood where he comes from and what it's about and what he represents. Mm. But I wanted him to represent all of that, represent where he comes, represent Hill Rock Heights, which is kind of a fictional Boyle Heights, Lincoln Heights. Mm. But to be all of the things that he is in the book and all of the things that don't always get granted a depiction, mm. which is his intellect and his pride and his love, his fierce love, protective love, and which is what love really should be and what strength should be used towards. And so I think that, all of that was already there in the book, and we never, and I just wanted to do justice to Felipe's book. Like, mm-hmm. I became friends with him very, very soon in the process. And I knew this character. I knew him in my bones. I mean, and it didn't all the way lock in until I put the jacket on. But once I put the jacket on, I could feel the whole character just like click into my spine, you know, which is something that happens a lot with costumes in general, but especially mm-hmm. when you're wearing a superhero costume. You know,
did you get to keep the jacket?
Finger quotes for the podcast. there's, you know, they kept it because we were going to do the show. We were going to do the Ghost Rider show. One of them went to a museum in Seattle.
Cool.
I think one of them was auctioned off somewhere. They're probably sitting in a warehouse in Santa Clarita, which is where all of the used props and things go. When we're done with them, they all live amazing. In these warehouses up in the valley.
You know, we think you, like, from our point of view, when you say, you know, you tried to do the character justice, you 100% did. You just, I was saying to Mike the other day, the thing that I noticed the most is how much extra nuance you see in your performance the second time round, when you're not sort of having to, I guess, pay as much close attention to the story because you know what's about to happen and you know kind of how it's going to unfold. So you
see the craft.
Yeah, you have that time to really pick up on the little fine details that you have. And they're amazing. They're so good. And, yeah, you should be extremely proud of yourself.
I mean, segueing from that as well.
Thank you, Anna.
How do you bring sort of relatable emotional honesty to characters in such incredible, fantastical circumstances?
You know, any loud sound is only as loud as the silence that bookends it. You know what I mean? Any flash of light in the day is only as bright as the night that succumbs in the dusk in the morning. You know, and any kind of great kind of movement is only, any movement you make as an actor in the blocking or any explosive action or anything you take is only as effective as the stillness that sandwiches it. And so I, you know, from actors that I love, you know, like Michael Shannon and, you know, Jim had just passed away and Gene Hackman and, you know, all the greats, Paul Newman, you know, it's just, McQueen, Bronson, all those guys, they're just quiet and they're still. And I like to say that I became a man before I wanted to be an actor, which helped me along the way, really did, in the sense that as a child, I never dreamed of this. I never even crossed my mind. Only in the sense that I loved movies, like we all did, and was shitting my pants when my mom took us to go see Terminator when I was 10 years old, or when she took us to see Batman in 89.
Well, I talk about life going full circle then after that.
Like me, those are huge events in your life to see these things with my mother. She, having a young mom, single mom, was great in that way, in the sense that she was a young person in her 20s who wanted to have fun and see cool movies. Yeah. And you're allowed to take kids in there if you're their parental guardian. So she took me to see, we got to see The Crow and Terminator 2 R-rated movie.
Wow.
Well, we probably shouldn't
have. What a great mom. Right.
So great mother. Oh yeah. Debbie Luna is a legend. But so we, I learned from, and Arnold, another example of that. People don't give him credit for his power on screen, his charisma. Mm-hmm. And one thing I did learn in college, I was saying there's a lot of things I learned, but nothing more important than those first moments of just having experience and being able to tell the truth about that experience through your character. But there were a lot of beautiful things I learned. And I did some training in college called viewpoints training and the Suzuki method. And it was about trying to cultivate an undismissible presence, in the sense that enough belief in the truth that a human body in space is already enough. Mm. I mean, it's already beautiful enough. It's already powerful enough. It's already profound enough to just see a human body standing in space still with focus and intent. And that stuck with me strong. I mean, it's in every moment of my work and exercising, my craft that lives through every single moment. Mm-hmm. And I think that helps. And I think it helped a lot with Robbie. Robbie's very kind of, I think they mentioned it. He's kind of the strong, silent type, whatever.
Yeah.
But,
there's so much
strong,
going on
and still until.
Yeah, yeah, there's so much going on beneath the surface. That's what you bring to it.
That's the soulful piece that people speak of, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so.
And I think that I appreciate you saying that, and I'm glad, I'm thankful that people, that it actually reads, because sometimes you're worried, you're not doing anything, but you are. It's a different, it's different than you asked about being on stage, and I loved all my time on stage, but it's different, it's the shift in focus of just turning your head like that on stage becomes me taking my eyes from Hannah to Mike, without moving any muscle on my face. You just have, that's really what I want to give people, is an experience of watching someone live.
We're very mindful of your time, and we ourselves have got to get our children to swimming shortly.
Well, our daughter's got gymnastics today.
Okay. That's always a fun element of the show too. It's like I can almost see the board on you guys' kitchen wall. I'll say thank you for the big moment. Just give me love, and I just want to give it back. And I was very, very, very happy to do this today. So
if you're agreeable, we'd love to get you on for part two, maybe at some point, because I feel like we have only just scratched the surface of you.
Absolutely.
And we'd just like to say we're huge fans.
Yeah, huge fans, and hugely appreciative of your generosity of time as well today, Gabriel. We and our listeners as well, who we know are big fans, I'm sure we'll get a real thrill out of hearing you talk, and we would love to do it again sometime.
I never abide being dissed.
Wow. Wow, I'm so to hear you say that is
that's the t-shirt, that's the Rewatch Project t-shirt.
Yeah, we cannot abide big disc.
But yeah,
abide big disc.
Thank you so much for your time.
I come back at the end of the season, so maybe that's a
That would be great. That would be really great.
Yeah, we'd love to have you back at the end of season two. Hey, maybe you could actually do a legit episode of the Rewatch Project with us, and maybe take a step back in time, rewatch the episode, and have a chat with us about that.
Well, yeah, sounds good. Why not? I'll see you guys soon. Really, really lovely folks, and y'all take care.
You too.
All the best.
Take
Bye.
Take care.
Adios.